Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with novelist Kathy Shefflin and children's book author Chris Clarkson. Second novel, Snake Root and Cohosh, New Orleans writer Kathy Shefflin takes us back to eastern Kentucky in the 1950s. Young Eva Hoskins summons up all her courage to leave her abusive husband Luther and runs away to a new life in a new town. This is a story rich in layers of human experience and understanding. Kathy Shefflin, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, tell us a bit about yourself. I love that you divide your time between New Orleans and a house in Folsom.
Yes.
A big red house.
Well, it's really not that big, but there are a lot of dogs in it. So my daughter jokingly called it Clifford because of Clifford the Big Red Dog.
A literary house.
Yes, a literary house with lots of dogs. Yes.
So how'd you get to New Orleans?
I've lived here over 25 years. My husband and I met as Peace Corps volunteers in East Africa, and he had lived here before when he was doing his public health degree at Tulane. And after we met, he said, we should come back to New Orleans. You should look at New Orleans and I was trying to figure out what my next step was after Peace Corps, and came back, applied to public health school, did public health school at Tulane. He went on to medical school. We got stuck in the Mississippi mud, and we've never left.
But public health school at Tulane is one of the most interesting places in the city.
It sure is.
People are doing such important work there. Mm-hmm. So how much of you is in this character, Eva? Just outline the plot for us.
Sure. I mean, Eva's really not about me. Thankfully, she's not about me. My husband jokes that... My friends ask me when I write these stories about domestic violence, like, are you safe at home? I'm like, yes, I'm safe at home.
Aww.
But there is, within my family history, there are, it's present in probably lots of people's family's history.
Yeah.
But so it wasn't my personal experience, thankfully, but it's something that I can speak up to from other family members. Mm-hmm. So Eva is really not about me so much. How she started, how she came into being was, I wrote this is a short story for a writing contest. And I needed historical fiction was the genre, mm-hmm. a tour guide, and a scam. Those are the three prompts I had. I had to have something that was like something not the way it's supposed to be. You know, in the beginning of the story, she's dressed as a boy, as a male.
Yeah.
She's disguising herself. And that maybe that's not a huge reveal, but she is in the very beginning dressed as a man because she's trying to hide from her abusive husband. And so I wanted to explore that trajectory where she is getting to start over, a new start, a new place.
Yeah.
And where she can find peace and comfort and safety in a new place.
But to be a tour guide, you have to have knowledge of something.
She did.
She has got that.
She does. Yes. Her mother was a midwife, and I knew midwives in Kentucky. The place I used to work for was the Frontier Nursing Service mm-hmm. in Kentucky that was started by a woman named Mary Breckenridge in 1925. And she basically is the founder of modern midwifery mm-hmm. In this country. And so having been in that environment for, it was only a year that I lived there, but I got to witness, I got to go in to births. I actually wrote at that time. I was writing as an assistant editor to their quarterly bulletin. So I got to interview midwives and coal miners and lumbermen and quilters doing human interest stories for the mm-hmm. newsletter. That place, like I said, there's such a richness, so yeah. many layers of people experience. And so that's where Snake Root came out of.
Now, are you an ace gardener? I have to ask.
No, I'm not.
Is the plant stuff?
The plant stuff is research. It's part of the process. I love plants. I love our, so our cousins own a farm right next to our property up in Folsom. They have 300 acres. We have 10. I walk on her 300 acres and I'm up there all the time, mm-hmm. taking pictures of plants, trying to identify what's out there. It's a passion, but it's, I by all means, no expert here. I enjoy it. I'm also part of the Nature Conservancy on the board of the Nature Conservancy. So I get to go out to some of their neat preserves and I take advantage of that every chance I get because mm-hmm. It is a part of my stories are definitely grounded in the earth and the plant and the environment, mm-hmm. because to me, that's such an important part of a story is the soil that it takes place in.
And was that part of your Peace Corps experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on a different island than where my husband was because we were on three little islands. You know, mm-hmm. it was a little volcanic island. It was beautiful. It was Islamic. So the call to prayer echoing around you is just like gorgeous and interesting and different, mm-hmm. you know, voices and words you don't understand, but there's a spiritualness to it and a quality to it that, you know, is sacred in some way. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
That's a very lucky experience for a writer to have.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. I've been really, really blessed with tremendous experiences that are now I'm finding a way into writing.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with novelist Kathy Shefflin. Her book is Snake Root and Cohosh. It would have been easy to write this story a different way because Eva is abused by her husband, Luther.
Yes.
And it's an unusual story in the way it progresses. So talk a little bit about that.
Yes, because you first meet her when she's running and you don't, or she's already run. She's a tour guide when you first meet her. She's mm-hmm. leading a tour and she's trying to inhabit this new persona that she's not really comfortable with. Her neck itches because her hair's growing out and she's been rubbing nettles into her skin so she looks less attractive and to keep people at a distance. She really doesn't want people too close. So she's trying to build up this physical barrier between her and the other people that she encounters. But even within that, people see her. You know, the woman, Mrs. Hoskins, in the boarding house sees her.
And they want to help her.
And I found that to be particularly true in Kentucky, where I lived. Mm-hmm. People want to help each other. There is a sense of community that is so powerful. And so it wasn't such a stretch to create those linkages with people. And when they see somebody who's struggling, they do want to be there for you. And so I think that was a powerful part of writing her character, is finding those people that were going to champion her and look out for her.
And so her husband does find her, does turn up.
He does turn up. And that's a whole other trajectory. And I think when I ended the story as a short story for the contest, I had it where you weren't sure it was going to happen. Like literally she saw her poisonous plants in the corner and said, I have a plan. If I need these plants, I've got a plan, right? But then I go into his headspace. And like, why is he the way he is? And I remember the first time I brought chapters to my writing class with Luther, looking into his headspace. And his early headspace is not a fun place to be.
No.
He's violent. He's mean. He sees her as nothing other than a task, you know?
Right.
And so one of my writing classmates said, why'd you have to bring him back? Why'd you do that? We could have left full enough alone. Why do we need this? It's like, well, I know it's uncomfortable, but I'm getting there. You know, I had a point of view where I wanted to dive into his story a little bit. Like, what makes a violent man a violent man?
Right.
We're not all born violent.
Right.
In my opinion, maybe some people can argue that, but I don't think that we're all born violent. I think mm-hmm. we are products of an environment that creates who we become. And I wanted to explore could he redeem himself? And, you know, some people may be like, that's not realistic. And maybe it's not.
Somebody
has to, like, why not Luther? Why not?
Well, I have this friend who's a writer, and she said, you know, when you have a character, you're the fairy godmother.
Yeah.
You give them everything they need.
Right.
Everything you want them to have.
To have, exactly. And I could grant them powers.
And so it was kind of interesting to see what you chose to give her.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that a lot because it takes you someplace you're not expecting to go.
You're not expecting, and it makes you a little uncomfortable, which I like that. I like to read stories where you're kind of, what's happening? You know, just because it's the tension and, you know, and I think that makes a more compelling story than if it's just easy peasy.
This was such a pleasure to read. It was really interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Because she was interesting and complex. the story went places you didn't expect to go. Mm-hmm. And you obviously had this affection for place and people. You know, you can tell this is a place that you've lived and loved.
Yes, thank you.
So
that means a lot. Thank you.
So keep busy in that big red house.
I will.
With all those dogs.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we've been talking with Kathy Shefflin, whose new book is Snake Root and Cohosh. Kathy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. It's been a great pleasure.
It is a great pleasure to welcome Chris Clarkson back to The Reading Life. Chris is one of the bright stars of New Orleans children's books, the author of the YA book, That Summer Night on Frenchman Street, the picture books, Where Did Benjamin Go, and Chloe and the Fireflies. Today, we're talking about his newest book, a collaboration with the great Billy Porter. It's called Songbird in the Light, and it's illustrated by Charlie Palmer. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back here, Susan. I love being here.
I know you do. I love having you here. And I love it when a new book comes.
Thank you. So
this is such a spirit-lifting book. And you can tell when you read it what a good time you had doing it. So talk about how it came about and the collaboration.
Actually, it's so interesting that we start with it being a spirit-lifting book, because it is. But actually, the day that I got the news that I would be able to first meet with Billy Porter, I was having the worst day.
Oh, no.
Yes. And it actually started during Mardi Gras. So I went outside. I was going to get some coffee. And then I found that my car was gone.
Oh, no.
So I panicked. I was thinking, oh, did I park somewhere else? It wasn't in the driveway. And then eventually turned out that someone had stolen my car that day. And so that day I was walking around. It was Mardi Gras. Everyone was celebrating. I was talking to my mom and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, my car's gone. And so while I was waiting to find my car, I get an email from my agent where she says, Billy Porter, with all caps, exclamation points. And she tells me that there is this opportunity to meet with him on this children's book because our editor, Billy, and my editor, Courtney, who we both worked with, she had recommended me to work with him on the children's book. So even though my car was lost that day, I still got this uplifting news that I would get to meet with Billy Porter, and that's how it started.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Were you scared?
I was excited because it was something that I was not expecting at all. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have expected I would woke up and my car would be gone. And then within a few, it was literally an hour that my agent would send me that email. And getting that email completely changed the trajectory of that day. I was so excited and they found my car. It was a loss, but still I was like, I get to meet with Billy Porter.
I know, he's so amazing.
So amazing.
So how did that happen?
We had a Zoom call and I got to talk to him. He was really cool. And we spoke about his book that he had published, his autobiography, Unprotected. Mm-hmm. And so we had a few conversations. Billy told me about the original story, and which was originally called Rockhead Bill.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes. And so basically the premise of that story was that his head grew a few two sizes bigger than his body. And with kids, they can be a little bit mean, so they would throw rocks at his head, which is so traumatic for a child. And so that was his original version. But I came in to kind of work with Billy to make it a little bit more children friendly, because even though that happened and that was his childhood experience with children, we do have to kind of soften, like, even the truth sometimes. So I came in to kind of help it make it more children friendly.
And imagine telling that story to a classroom full of kids. You know, that's kind of scary after recess. You know what I mean?
It is scary. Yeah. It is scary. But we got to meet. We met about two times and we got to collaborate. Billy was very passionate, as I expected him to be. And it was just a very easy experience. We actually wrote one draft together, and this is the draft that...
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with children's book author Chris Clarkson. His new book is Songbird in the Light, written with Billy Porter. Lots of times, publishers don't want you to meet with illustrators. You know, they like to keep writers and illustrators separate for children's books. So how did that work for you? Did you work with Charlie or not?
So that was very much Billy. Billy knew that with his book, he wanted it to be art. So he was very particular about the illustrator that he was looking for. They did go through several illustrators, and Billy saw Charlie's art. And Charlie's art, he is a true artist. His work hangs in galleries, and every page in this book, every picture looks like it belongs on a wall in a gallery. And so Billy was the one that picked Charlie, and his work resonated with Billy, and just it also resonates with me. I'm so happy with the art.
So tell us the basic story.
So the basic story is that Billy, he is bullied, and he has this light in him. His voice is so strong, and sometimes when you're bullied, what that does is it diminishes that light. And so with the birds, with his teacher, with his mom, he finds his voice. And when he participates in the talent show at the very end, that really brings him to life. And so it's reaching inside, finding that light inside of you. And despite what everyone says, just knowing that that is my gift and I'm going to use it. I'm going to sing, I'm going to shine, I'm going to fly. And so that's ultimately what he does at the end.
And what I love about this book is, well, one of the parts I love the most is the way he's peeking through the curtains and he's on the stage and he's getting a little closer.
Yeah.
A little, you know, step by step. And what a gradual process that is. And you can just feel the anticipation.
Yes.
Which is what I think.
Because even as he is flying and he knows that he has this gift, he knows that he can sing and he knows that his voice is powerful, despite his body being small, there's always that fear of rejection, especially when you experienced it, especially when you've already been bullied. You could get on stage and you can sing and know that you sound good, but they can still laugh. But as he's inching onto the stage, basically young Billy is saying, I don't care. I don't care if they laugh at me. I don't care if I get booed off the stage. I'm still going to sing. And for that, that is that inching. It's kind of like building up the courage. No matter what happens, if they like me, they don't like me, I like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sing.
And this is good. And I'm good at it.
Yes.
You know? And he has such terrific love and confidence coming his way from his family.
Yes. And one of the things that was really important, Billy's mom passed away, and she was also, she was in a wheelchair. So it was very important to kind of show, you know, because that is true to Billy's life, to have that representation of his mother, because she was and is such an important part of his life.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah.
But it sounds like just the sort of thing he would do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Really. So read a little bit for us.
Of course. When I sing, I feel like a tall sunflower dancing in the rain. But when I'm quiet, I feel small, like a songbird with its music turned off. At school, I don't say much. I try really hard to fit in. But the other kids still don't like me. And they laugh at how I walk. And they laugh at how I talk. I wish that I could be a songbird at school, too. It's hard to sing and believe in myself when the other kids don't want to hear my songs. But Miss Irene likes my songs. She says, "Songbird, don't be scared. Sing."
I love that. Songbird, don't be scared. This looks like a New Orleans book.
Charlie and his magic.
I mean, there are bees flying through
yes.
here in some places.
Charlie and his magic. When writing the picture books, the authors will write the art notes. And then from there, the art notes are really just a suggestion of what could be on the page. And Charlie really brings the rest to life. Mm-hmm. So Charlie's vision goes from there and just created this magic that we're looking at.
Yeah. Well, read the part about singing when he's getting closer and closer to singing.
Yes.
And there are beautiful birds everywhere.
Yes, all over the place.
That must have been fun for Charlie to do.
They're going to hear me. They're going to see me. And I'm going to sing. I'm going to let my songs fly up, 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 all the way to the sky. My body is small, but my voice is strong. Hear me, see me. I'm flying, I'm soaring, I'm singing, I'm shining. I'm a bright songbird flying up, up, up to the light. Look at how I shine.
Ah, it's so great. This book, this picture book, has the feeling of a classic. You know, it's just so rich and alive, and it's beautifully written. It's beautiful to look at, and the lesson is so strong and so cheering to any child.
We can all relate to that. We have all been in places, adults too, where we have been bullied, and sometimes you don't understand why it happens, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like, I am still going to be me. I'm still going to show up. I don't know why you're bullying me or why you're saying that, but at the end of the day, I know that I have something to offer, and I deserve to sing and be here and talk and be myself.
Yes, and it's not just bullying, it's overcoming self-doubt.
That too. Bully ourselves as well.
We do, really, yeah. And it's just this sense of belief and belief in your gift. And once you have that, nothing can stop you, really.
And you have to look no further than Billy, who has overcome so much to be where he's at and to shine.
And he does. He makes everybody happy. He makes everybody smile. Isn't he just like one thing short of an EGOT?
He
an Emmy,
is.
A Grammy.
Yeah.
Tony. All he needs is an Oscar now.
Yes. He's very close and very deserved.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Well, so are you. He's lucky to work with you.
I'm glad we got to work together.
Even if you don't sing.
Yes.
Well, we've been talking with Chris Clarkson, whose beautiful new book with Billy Porter and Charlie Palmer is Songbird in the Light. Chris, thank you for this beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you for having me again, Susan.
Here's what's on tap this week in the literary life. Commentator David Griscom appears in conversation with Nathan Martin and signs The Myth of Red Texas, Cowboys, Populism, and Class War in the Radical South, Friday, April 7th at 6 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop. The Friends of the Jefferson Parish Library hold their big book sale Friday through Sunday, April 17th through 19th at the Pontchartrain Center, Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, April 19th, from noon to 5 p.m. Free admission and free parking. This is one of the largest book sales in the New Orleans area, with over 65,000 items for sale, including gently used adult and children's books, puzzles, DVDs, CDs, and records. Cash, credit, and debit cards are accepted, but no checks. You still have a couple days to make it out to the New Orleans Poetry Festival and Small Press Fair, which runs through Sunday, April 19th, headquartered at the New Orleans Healing Center on St. Claude Avenue and at various venues in the neighborhood. The book fair takes place at the New Orleans Healing Center all weekend long, Friday through Sunday, April 17th through 19th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's free, open to the public, and a place to score fresh books straight from the presses. New this year, the Small Press Fair Happy Hour, Friday from 4 p.m. until 5 p.m. in the Grand Hall. Check out nolapoetry.com for the complete schedule. Local author Anel Lopez, author of the short story collection I'll Give You a Reason, will discuss the characteristics of the Hermit Crab essay at 9:30 a.m. Saturday, April 18th at the Wagner Library, 6466 Riverside Drive, Metairie. This event is open to the public. And in case you were wondering, a hermit crab essay is a creative nonfiction form that adopts an existing non-literary structure, such as a recipe, syllabus, or rejection letter, as a shell to contain personal, often vulnerable content. Coined by Brenda Miller and Suzanne Paolo, this form uses the constraint of the borrowed structure to provide distance, focus, and often playful, innovative storytelling. The really, really big book sale at Ladder Library is Saturday, April 18th, open to members only from 10 to 11 a.m., then to the public from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Used books, movies, and music. Library patrons have the unique opportunity to meet ARC Athens NOLA NYC Research Fellow Vicky Tsuru and Dionysus Christofilos Yiannassis at 7 p.m. Monday, April 20th at the East Bank Regional Library, 4747 West Napoleon Metairie. This event is open to the public. Tsuru is an independent curator, writer, and researcher whose work centers on the commons, public space, participatory art, and environmental concerns. Christofilos Yiannassis is a visual artist whose multidisciplinary practice examines mythology, memory, tradition, identity, and socio-political commentary through painting, installation, and performative action. Patrons will hear about their work and their experiences in the greater New Orleans area and take part in an informal conversation about research, contemporary art, and how art can deepen one's understanding of everyday life. The great David Sedaris appears Monday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Orpheum Theater. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. Taylor Brown reads and signs his new novel, Wolvers, Wednesday, April 22nd at 6 at Octavia Books. Shannon Terry Wiley reads from and signs her debut novel, Yellow September, Wednesday, April 22nd at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. The Women's National Book Association of New Orleans presents a Poetry Month event Thursday, April 23rd at 6 at Octavia Books, featuring poet members to both read from their works and discuss the role of poetry in today's world. If there's enough time, there will be an open mic.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.